And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Look, I am not a meteorologist, but you don't need me to tell you if you don't absolutely have to be out today, do not be out today. Joe Rex Road, it is quite slick out there.
It is. It's pretty rough. You got to be very careful if you're out there. I would not go out there. Also, if I'm going to throw a PSA out here real quick, you know, keep a little drip going in the sinks.
Nice.
Cupboards open. You know, you don't want those pipes to freeze. So that's one little bit of advice. I was worried last night about power outage possibly. I have not heard about any in the area. Hopefully that's the case.
Ryan Porth, you are our fearless leader, and you took it upon yourself last night to come into the office before the storm really hit and got in there and got ice all over the roads. We appreciate your dedication. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing just fine. The air mattress in the office was quite comfortable throughout the night, and nice. I am thankful that I am here now and didn't have to brave the roads at 4 a.m. So glad to be here.
Good. So what does a day like today look like for you?
Well, it's always TBD on days like today. It depends on who else from our staff can get here. So it's kind of on standby mode until we know if, say, Ian Safar can get here to produce the afternoon show. Elijah Campbell, producer of Darren Donick and Chase, is also producing the Nashville Predators game tonight. He also took it upon himself to make it to the station last night. So not only myself, but Elijah, we were both in the building last night, you know, making sure that we were here and that we had bodies in the building that could get us through today.
Well, we appreciate that. It was like a big slumber party last night for Ryan Porth and Elijah Campbell. So we appreciate that. And again, be careful today. If you've absolutely got to be out, those roads are slick. We've seen some videos and some photos tweeted out, you know, Samantha Russell, Fox 17, Lindsay Nance, Channel 4 as well. It was just some of the roadways today. It does not look great. And more action coming later today in our area on the weather front of things. So we'll make sure to keep you updated as that happens and as we get more information on that. Joe Rex Road, the Nashville Predators on Saturday night, it was not good. A 4-2 loss to the Detroit Red Wings. The first couple of periods, I've got to be honest, were some of the worst that I've seen from that team in a long, long time. I mean, they could not get anything going offensively. You got halfway through the game, they had 6 shots on goal in that game against Detroit. What stood out to you in the game against the Red Wings? I think just a brutal loss for the Predators on Saturday night. 4-2, they fall to Detroit.
Well, what stood out is just we're headed toward I mean, we've already started these discussions, you know, about if things go bad this year, if this team is not going to really be hanging around and even have a shot in a tough division, you know, then what? What's the move? What's the way to out of this, basically? And I mean, almost what stood out to me was almost the outside, you know, the off the ice stuff Saturday. Twitter fights, media, you know, fans upset. You know, that I mean, it's amazing to me when people get after my guy Vingan. You know, I mean, poor dude. I mean, I don't know what else you want him to do, you know, but that's how it goes. I mean, people are angry. And so, and then the comments after the game, just the comments after the game were not encouraging, you know, and I know that Forsberg kind of walked it back a little bit, but, you know, talking about not being dialed in and things like that. And look, we see it. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, obviously the Preds can be happy with their third period or in other games with their third period when they're down multiple goals and they make a push. But come on. I mean, that's not – I mean, what we're seeing here early in these games, I think, is I don't know if I buy, like, that they're not dialed in. I think it's more that they're just not very good. But whatever it is, it's very discouraging, and things are not heading in a good direction at all.
Yeah, and you brought up those comments from Philip Forsberg after the game – just after the loss, and really, I almost feel bad for him right now because he's having to single-handedly carry this team offensively. But You mentioned the comments that Forsberg had of not being dialed in to begin games. Here's what Nashville Predators forward Philip Forsberg had to say after the game on Saturday night against Detroit.
I don't know. I can only really speak about today, but today we're, I don't know, we're not really dialed in. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, obviously Detroit came ready to play today. They played a lot more physical than the other day, and we didn't match that at all until the third, where we got going. And yeah, it's obviously not good enough.
So that was Philip Forsberg after the game. And Joe, I've got to be honest, like, you're 6-9-0 on the season right now, and you hear those comments about not being dialed in. I don't know how much I buy that. We've got some more audio to play later from Philip Forsberg. I don't know how much of it's that and how much of it just right now. They're searching for answers all over their lineup. I mean, yes, it's easy to look at the third period and how much better they've been in that period and just think, okay, well, these guys are sleepwalking out of the gate. I don't know how much of it's that and how much of it is just when you get down to the third period, teams are sitting back a little bit and you're able to generate more offensive pressure. I think right now this is a team that's just searching for answers and they're not coming up with a whole lot of solutions.
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, things flying around, and it's just going to go this way if they don't pretty drastically turn things around on the ice. I mean, you know, I'm looking at like Adrian Dater, who is a very I think a respectable hockey writer, guy who's covered the Avs forever, tweeting out that he hears like John Hines on the hot seat. You know, it's like what? I mean, you know, the guy's been in the job for a year, but that's how things go when a team is losing, and so everybody's gonna pick their favorite thing for why it's bad. You know, it's Hines, it's obviously David Poile, this guy's gonna be under a lot of heat here, and then we look at these players, and you know, the players, of course, David Poile picks them, but I still think that there's a lot of guys on this roster who simply aren't playing up to par. I mean, I don't think it's like this totally talentless roster that we're just discovering is talentless. I mean, there's a track record with a lot of these guys that says, you know, they should be better than this. Okay, so then flip it back around. Let's keep going in a circle on this then. Maybe it's Hines. I mean, look, I think it's everything. And the question to me is, you know, can these guys put that noise away and get galvanized and win hockey games? Like, I'm not, you know, Dallas, they haven't been playing great, but like somewhere along the way here, real soon, it's going to have to flip or it's just going to keep going down that road.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, you're at the point now where you're the Predators, you're 6-9-0 on the season. You've lost to, I think, what everybody would consider the worst team in the division. And we talked about it. Like, you've had so much lack of success so far against Tampa Bay and against Carolina and against Dallas, which, by the way, you'll see again tonight and tomorrow, taking on the Stars on the road. You've got to come up with these points against Detroit and Chicago if you're going to have a chance of hanging around in the division. And now you look at it, I mean, you're 12 points on the season. Right now, Columbus is the number four team, and they've got 18. You're digging yourself a hole that it's just going to be really hard to climb out of. I mean, you've played three more games at this point than Carolina and Florida, and they've got six more points than you do. So right now, I mean, they're in a serious hole that they're going to have to find a way to dig themselves out of. And it was the amazing part to me is just not being able to build on anything positive. You find a way to come back, you get that dramatic win against Florida, and then the next game I thought was just a total stinker from the Predators. You come back, you win in the last minute against Detroit, and then the next game is a total stinker. I thought Saturday night's game was the worst game the Predators have played all season long. And that's the most discouraging part to me if I'm a Predators fan, is whenever you have something good happen, whenever you have a win that you think may be able to galvanize you moving forward, you come out the next game and it doesn't even look like the same team. I mean, I thought they played really well in that third period Thursday night against Detroit, and they just totally flushed that down the drain Saturday night. That to me, with a group that still, you look around that roster, they've been through a lot. There's a lot of veterans on that team. You should be able to try to build some things off of positive performances. They're not doing that whatsoever right now. And that, to me, does not spell good news for the rest of this season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have 15 games in now. There are two teams with a worse goal differential than than the Predators minus 16. The Red Wings minus 18, so they're in a battle right now. at the bottom of the Central, and then you know you get those lovely Ottawa Senators with their minus 30. That's it. That's it in the entire league. Okay, so and I mean, if you really want to spin things the Preds way, you could say, well, okay, take out the Dallas game. That was a wild. They gave up all the power play goals. Okay, then it's, you know, it's minus 9. I mean, it's still, oh, there's one worse team that, or the, you know, Canucks and Sharks, and that's it. I mean, it's, you know, it, to me, you talk about not building on those games, and could those, I mean, to me, those games look more and more like flukes.
Yeah.
You know, and this looks more and more like reality. And, you know, it's going to be a very uncomfortable few months here, unless something really dramatic happens.
And Joe, we've talked about Pekka. Go ahead, Report.
Well, I was about to say, Matt Duchene mentioned on this show last Wednesday that it felt like rock bottom, at least offensively, after they had just lost back-to-back games to the Lightning. They lost 6-1 last Tuesday night to the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it did feel like rock bottom at that point. The second intermission Saturday night felt like rock bottom.
Yeah.
You're trailing 3-0. Right. I think you were just about to get to Pecorine. He gave up a couple of soft goals in the first two periods, and you weren't generating anything offensively in those first two periods. That felt like rock bottom to me.
It did, and Joe, to that point, like we spent so much time on Friday talking about Pecorine and just how good he looks. And look, Saturday night's game was not his fault. Like, you generate that level of offense, I mean, you're not going to win any game. But I didn't think Peck was very good on Saturday night either. He did not help in these matters. And when you have, I mean, it's almost like this team has got to play perfect right now. And that's not a good spot to be if you're an NHL team.
Right. I mean, he was the one thing that was like, okay, well, Peck is hot. Maybe he can, you know, carry this team. And even, you know, moving into better games, tougher games against tougher teams. Type of guy who can steal you any kind of game when he's playing like that. And then he goes, like you said, gives up a couple softies. I mean, who's playing well right now on this team? Who would we say is playing well on this team?
Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi at times. And that list kind of stops right there, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not a long list of guys that are playing well. And that to me is very concerning as they move forward. And now you hit the road to a place where you haven't had a whole lot of success as of late, taking on the Dallas Stars tonight. Going to be very interesting to see how the Predators come out and respond. And speaking of the Predators, we'll continue to discuss it when we come back. Get your reaction to the game on Saturday night as well. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and ask the question. We'll play some more audio from the post-game press conference the other night. How concerned are we about some of the comments made by Ryan Ellis and Philip Forsberg after the game? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this snowy, icy Monday morning in the Middle Tennessee area. Hope everybody is being cautious out there and is being as careful as they can be. We're talking about the Nashville Predators, a tough 4-2 loss on Saturday night against the Detroit Red Wings. And Joe, a little bit earlier in the show, we played some comments from Philip Forsberg after the game, talking about not being dialed in to begin games. The Predators, halfway through the game in this game, had 6 shots on goal against the Detroit Red Wings team, which, you know, has been better defensively this year, especially when they've had their full complement of players available to them, but still not a team that should be able to shut you down, especially to that degree in any game. So it was a really disappointing performance offensively for the Predators until the third period in that game. But Forsberg talked about not being dialed in to begin games and was pressed a little further about that in his post-game press conferences by Adam Bingen from The Athletic. Here's what Philip Forsberg had to say when Adam followed up on that question.
Philip, earlier when you said that, at least for tonight, the group wasn't dialed in, who does that fall on? Is that the players in the dressing room to make sure you're prepared? Is that the coaching staff to motivate you? I guess, where does that lack of being dialed in come from?
I mean, I don't know if dialed in is I think everybody has the right intentions to come to every game. And I mean, it's, I think dialed in might not be exactly the right word. I think we're just, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough this quick to answer it. I'm sure I'll get another chance to answer this question. But yeah, I, like I said, I think we're getting outworked in the first. And in the second, I think we're getting away a little bit from our game plan. In the third, we're playing our hockey, and that's when we're 80% in their zone. And unfortunately, that's been the case, like someone touched on earlier, that we got to be better in the first and the second. And to try to answer your question, it's at the end of the day, the coaches are doing everything they can. It's up to every individual to be dialed in and like I said, to come ready to play. I think that's where we end this.
So, Joe, I hear those comments there from Philip Forsberg, which, by the way, an epic ending to that clip right there. By the way, so that's where I think we end this. But
that's where we end this, Vegan. You and I end this discussion now.
It was awesome by Philip Forsberg to end that conversation there. But, Joe, that's when I said earlier, it feels like a team that's kind of searching for some answers that doesn't really have any. That clip there is where I get that from, because to me it just seems like Philip Forsberg is trying to figure out what's going on with this team right now. And I'm not sure how many answers the players have at this point, 15 games in.
I mean, how many post-game pressers last year sounded kind of like this one? I would say quite a few.
Yeah, quite a few. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of the, and I'm not saying it's the exact same thing where it was always bad starts, but some kind of just frustration and inability to like put your finger on what's going on. You know, it's like, and I understand these guys, obviously they have confidence in themselves. These are some, you know, there's a lot of individual talent on this team, but, and we're going to go listen to, I know Ellis here in a minute. I thought he had some pretty illuminating comments too on, Not to help solve the issue, but just to show you that they're just so unable right now to figure out what's happening. You know, it's just like there's just a total lack of chemistry across the roster right now when they're actually in these games, or at least for stretches of these games, way too long that, you know, gives them very little chance to win them.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that you look at this team in the first two periods the other night offensively. It's just they got nothing going. And I'm not talking about, you know, they had some good chances here or there. They got nothing going through the first 30 minutes offensively the other night. Even some of the shots that they had, like one of them came at the end of the first period, and it was basically like a dump in from Victor Arvidsson. That was the shot. I mean, it went on goal technically, but it wasn't one of those things that was, you know, dangerous. So even some of the shot totals that they had, they had a 0% chance of going in. So that to me was even more concerning is, yeah, like it's bad enough to be, you know, six shots on goal 30 minutes into the game, but like 3, 4, 5 of the shots that they had weren't very dangerous either. That to me, it even compounded more, you know, how inept they looked offensively on Saturday night. Ryan Ellis talked about that after the game, just talked about the frustration level for this team and how things are going right now for this group with the Nashville Predators. Here's what Preds associate captain Ryan Ellis had to say after the game on Saturday night.
Yeah, very frustrating. There's no excuses. Like, we're not making excuses. We're not feeling bad for ourselves. It's our play right now is unacceptable. The results are unacceptable, and it needs to change. It's not like we have a lot of time. The good thing is every game is a division game, and it gives us an opportunity to catch up, but we're digging ourselves a hole, and it's only due to ourselves. Nobody's no one else's fault but the guys in that locker room.
So he ends it there by saying it's nobody else's fault but the guys in that locker room. And it's been interesting to watch Ryan Ellis this year, Joe, because we talked about it in training camp. He was a guy that said, you know, the work ethic has got to be a part of this team again and the identity of this group, and talked about how there's a buy-in level at the training camp that maybe they didn't have in years past. And it kind of felt like a rejuvenated Ryan Ellis to some degree in terms of how he was talking about this team. And we were wondering, you know, how much of that is it's just a new year, a new season, a new opportunity, and how much of that is there something to it where maybe there was something going on in the locker room. And right now, I mean, after that game, that was as frustrated as I can remember seeing Ryan Ellis in a long, long, long time. It's a very honest comments there about this group and about the way they've started this season for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, and we heard a lot early in the season, of course, from, you know, Matt Duchene on our show about even the the locker room, you know, the guys, you know, getting along and, you know, more of a fun group, things like that. Man, it can't be very fun right now. You know, no. And the thing is too, you're talking like, so this performance, which I agree with Porth. I mean, rock bottom is you're sitting there looking at like a 3-0 deficit. Pecorine is about to be pulled for Saros for the third period against the freaking Red Wings. And this is, what, 5 days, 4 days after the players only meeting, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you've already played the players only meeting card. And then almost instantly, very shortly after that, you play like this. So a lot of self-reflection, a lot of trying to find answers. And it feels, I know it's not exactly the same. And, you know, again, you go back a little bit more than a year, and a lot of the focus was on Laviolette, on the coaching, but it does feel like a continuation now of just this overall, you know, these guys should be better, but then at some point you're like, are we sure they should be better?
Well, to that point, Joe, I mean, they've lost 6 of their last 8 games, a 3-2 win against Detroit last Thursday. I mean, think about what we'd be talking about right now if, you know, Joel Quenneville didn't basically gift wrap them a game in Florida. I mean,
right.
That's what happened. I mean, he took a bad challenge, gave them a power play. They're able to convert on it. Philip Forsberg wins in overtime. But, I mean, they're a Philip Forsberg 5-point performance and a Joel Quenneville challenge away from the only win in their last eight games being a win in the last minute against Detroit on Thursday night. I mean, that's the reality of this team right now. So, I mean, it's you paint it that way, it doesn't look very good right now for this Predators team.
Well, and when you look at the standings too, I mean, all 9 losses coming in regulation. Like it's not like this team has been coming close to forcing the game to overtime and getting that extra point in the standings. I mean, they're barely winning these games, and they're losing some of these games where it's really not a contest 40 minutes in.
Yeah. Like early in the year, you know, again, you know, going back to Deschene, talking about, you know, he felt like their record didn't reflect how they were playing. And, you know, maybe in a couple games, he has a point. You could look at it that way, look at it the other way and say, what if they had pulled a couple of those out? But I also feel like this team right now, I mean, I do feel like early they were playing well. I liked how they were playing in those first few games, but it's been a pretty significant stretch now, even though Saturday may have been rock bottom, where a lot of their play has been in that neighborhood. And that's troubling, you know. This wasn't just like your random stinker. It's kind of been trending this way.
Yeah, it has. And look, I realize that they have injuries right now. I mean, Matthias Ekholm not being out there obviously hurts. Ryan Johansson not being out there. I mean, they've had some injuries that they've had to deal with, but they've still got enough pieces, you would think, on this group and with this lineup where you can have a better performance offensively than that on a Saturday night against Detroit. And, you know, you look at Philip Forsberg right now. I mean, with the start that he's off to, 7 goals in this game, like, just think about where this group would be right now without him. I mean, he's a guy that we knew heading into the season had to play really well, and he is. He's basically a point-per-game player at this point. Just imagine what this offense would look like if he wasn't producing at that rate. I mean, they've got, outside of him, they got a whole lot of problems right now offensively.
Right, and, you know, Deschene has been able to, after, you know, as we've talked about a lot, you know, really playing well. He's produced some lately, but I mean, I just it feels like, so a couple of guys who I thought would be going by now, and they just haven't been able to find much. You know, Granlund, Arvidsson, you know, those guys are, there's two guys that you just have to have more from those guys, and they're just, you know, they're not getting it. Certainly, Johansson. I mean, that's a killer loss for a team that, again, we already knew, like, they were going to lean so heavily, you know, on that really, like, core handful of guys to try to produce offense. But, you know, more offense from your defensemen too. I mean, I feel like Josi is starting to kind of assert himself more in that way, but they need more of that. I mean, there's just, you know, you can't just rely on the like the random Fabbro goal or Grimaldi goal. I mean, you've got to get your main guys who are healthy doing more.
You do, and the Predators will be back at it tonight against the Dallas Stars, and we'll have your opportunity for Preds Pick to Click coming up later in the show today at 8:45, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. When we come back, we will introduce our poll question of the day surrounding J.J. Watt and maybe what the interest level should be for the Tennessee Titans. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And let's introduce our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Titans fans, what would be your financial limit to signing J.J. Watt this offseason? Your options are $5 million, $8 million, $10 million, or do whatever it takes. Very early in the voting process, 73 votes are in, 35% going with $8 million being the financial limit for J.J. Watt, 27% say $10 million, 20% say do whatever it takes, and 18% say $5 million. Joe, I got to be honest with you, I voted for $5 million in this poll, and right now it is in dead last place in the poll question.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I over since this happened, which was on the show, I think it was Friday, right? Was it Friday?
Yeah,
I think it was Friday. I've seen a lot of stuff out there about more in that 10 range. And I guess it shouldn't be surprising because that's kind of what happens. Someone's on the market, the price tag, you know, just naturally goes up. I mean, again, even with some of the Titans free agents, like you see people talking about Corey Davis getting 15 mil, and it's like, well, then he's going to be somewhere else. I mean, 15 mil is what the Titans, you know, that was the option, fifth year option for the number five pick in the 2017 draft. That was like, of course you're turning that down. So, I mean, the numbers go up, and you also kind of thought, you know, with the cap situation, maybe some of these signings wouldn't be inflated like that, but you know what? It's the NFL, and teams seem to find a way with the cap to do creative things to make it work. But I'm with you. I'm in that $5 million range. I guess you could talk me in the 7-8 range.
Yeah, but even get then, on up I'm there, like, buddy.
But even then, I'm real, you know, because again, like if you do that, you are now like you can just count yourself out of one of the in their prime guys who I think you need to really be pursuing. I mean, and that's the question. Do you, if you get Watt, if you were to get him for like, let's say it's 8, you know, then you could, and I'm saying this without knowing everything that you're going to do, but there's going to be some cap casualties on this team and there's going to be some movement to create room. But, you know, you could also maybe get another like real down the list guy to go with that, like a $5 million guy, right? Or something like that. And that's it. So that's, I get, to me, that's kind of the question. If you're a Titans fan, you know, would you prefer Watt and a just sort of a depth guy? Or would you rather go get someone who right now might actually be able to get you a 12 sack season?
Yeah. And look, with J.J. Watt, the prices and the numbers that I've seen floated out there over the weekend, I guess to your point, I probably shouldn't be surprised because it's the NFL. But you're talking about a guy that's, you know, at his age, 32 years old, and just the wear and tear that he's been through. I mean, I'm looking at Pro Football Focus right now. They come out with their free agents, their top 100. Number one, you know, J.J. Watt is number 20 on the list. But the prediction that they got him signing is a two-year contract for $25 million, $20 million which is fully guaranteed at its signing. I mean, you're talking about, you know, $12.5 million a year. That's just the rate for J.J. Watt. I don't know that if I'm the Titans, I'm willing to go that high for a guy that I still think is a good player, but you're talking about a guy that had 5 sacks last year. Like, to me, when you're going to get, you know, address the pass rush, you've got to get some guys that are in the prime of their career and have done it recently. And I'm talking like last year. Like, you know, we've talked about Judon. We've talked about Shaq Barrett. Maybe he doesn't get to free agency, but to me, you know, once you get to the $10 million, $12 million range for J.J. Watt, that just doesn't seem worth it to me. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he comes in here and, you know, would have a, you know, a new energy about him, and he's able to stay healthy like he was last year, and he can look maybe not like the J.J. Watt of old, but can be a really productive player for you. But that seems like a heavy price tag to me for J.J. Watt.
Right. I mean, a lot of this is because of injuries, but starting with the 2016 season, he has 26 and a half sacks in that time. So you're talking five seasons, 26 and a half sacks, you know, basically five a year. Now that includes none in 17 because he was hurt.
Right.
He did play five games, but he had no sacks. It includes a 16 sack. I mean, that is, you know, I guess if you're a GM or, you know, whoever looking at Watt and trying to figure out how much is left in you, can point to 2018 and say, man, he played all 16 games and he had 16 sacks, you know, but then you get back to 2019 and you have the shoulder thing where he's trying to play through it, yeah, and everything, yeah, with the brace, you know, I mean, the guy's tough as nails. I mean, but it's also how many injuries do you have to have before you see like the guy's diminished as a player? He's been in this league a long time, a lot of wear and tear. And I think numbers like you just said, that's totally a name brand number. You know, it's not a reality of player or production number. And I understand that the intangibles with him are absolutely fantastic and they're worthwhile. And I think with some teams, that's the kind of thing that maybe could really do something for you. Again, go back to Tom Brady and the Bucks. I totally buy the idea that it wasn't just that he came in and was a quarterback who didn't throw 30 picks. I think he came in and kind of showed that place how to win. Now, a defensive lineman in the tail end of his career probably can't have that much impact, as much impact as a you know, the all-time best quarterback. But I get that. But that's not a Titans need, you know. I just think this is such a name brand price for him, but doesn't mean that no one will pay it. But I mean, I think the Titans would be crazy to entertain anything close to that stuff.
And here's the blurb from Pro Football Focus regarding J.J. Watt. It says, quote, even with some decline in recent years, Watt remains one of the best edge defenders in the league, and his 85.5 overall grade ranked seventh among edge defenders in 2020. After battling injuries off and on for about 5 years, Watt was only one of two defensive linemen to play over 1,000 snaps last season, showing that he still is capable of producing at an every down level. So, obviously, J.J. Watt did a great job this year of staying on the field and staying healthy. But to me, if you're a team signing him, that's not something that you can bank on. He did it, you know, last year, and maybe he's, you know, at a place right now where he can stay healthy. But if you're a team, how you could bank on J.J. Watt playing 16 games for you at this point would be mind-boggling to me. There's no way I could bank on that.
Right. And I've got a jump in on Pro Football Focus again here a little bit, because that's great. That sounds great. You know, the win rate and everything. Again, according to them, Jadeveon Clowney was not quite great, but he was very good for the Titans this year. Okay. So, I mean, are you making plays or are you not? Again, you can't give enough respect or a tip of a cap to J.J. Watt after all he's been through to come back and play a whole season like this. And he did make plays. Shoot, he made a monster play in this stadium in this city this year, you know, as soon as the Titans lost Taylor Lewan. But you just got to – I mean, this is where I think sometimes NFL teams fall into the trap of big-name player. He's been great, so let's overpay for him now. And, you know, the hard part for the Titans is if you're not going this way, like who of the younger guys out there – is going to come in and give you massive impact for the big bucks. We saw they tried to get it last year and it totally flopped. But and there's a little bit of the Clowney thing with Watt too, the name brand thing. I think the difference is Clowney still, at least going into this year, I still thought, okay, if he's healthy, he's still in his prime, right? I mean, he's still an elite athlete in his prime if healthy. I mean, no one thinks Watt is. I mean, Watt's prime was, you know, 2014 and 15, he had 38 sacks between those seasons. He also had another 20 and a half sack season in 2012. That was his prime.
Well, in fairness, he may have had a 38 sack season against the Titans that year by himself.
Yes, yes. That was would that have been Zach Mettenberger?
Oh, yeah, the Zach Mettenberger. I don't even remember who the offensive lineman was at that point. It was not good, though. I mean, he was mic'd up in that game. Just a dominating performance. Ryan Porth, we talked about J.J. Watt when this news broke on Friday, and it seemed like he's a guy that, as a Titans fan, you may be interested in going. I think you said, you know, $7, $8 million would probably be the range that you'd be comfortable going with if you're the Titans. Do you still feel the same? After seeing some of these numbers that have been thrown around over the weekend, do you think the Titans should still pursue J.J. Watt?
I do. I do. I mean, I said $7 to $8 million Friday, and I would still back that comment. J.J. Watt, yes, you guys have hit on it. He's not in his prime. But if you can squeeze another good season or two out of him, I think he's absolutely worth it. And I think you put him next to Jeffrey Simmons, and Simmons, I think, becomes a better defensive lineman as a result. I think the entire front seven for the Titans defense would become better with the presence of J.J. Watt if you're getting a good season or two out of him.
I think that's a good point you bring up about Simmons, too, because we've talked about getting him some help. Now, is J.J. Watt that guy? I think he absolutely could come in and help Jeffrey Simmons. The question is, what is the price going to be? And that's what, if you're John Robinson, you got to figure out how comfortable are you kind of creeping up into this sweepstakes if it gets into a double-digit salary for you know, J.J. Watt in the $10 million, $11 million a year range. Because if that's the case, you better be very, very sure that J.J. Watt could come in and make a huge difference for you on that side of the ball. And speaking of J.J. Watt, when we come back, we'll get your reaction. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Should the Titans be interested in signing J.J. Watt? We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
1025 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing J.J. Watt, now a free agent. Should the Tennessee Titans be interested in signing J.J. Watt? And Joe, it's interesting. Like, I've heard the theory thrown out there that maybe if you're J.J. Watt, you're so vindictive at this point that you want to stay in the division, whether it's with the Colts or with the Titans, and try to play the Texans as many times as you can play. And what do you think about that? The idea that J.J. Watt says, you know what? Forget it. I'm staying in the AFC South no matter what. I want to play the Texans and just shove it to them for the next couple of years.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Of course, you know, he also may be like, I got to get out of this division because Urban Meyer is going to bring an amazing strength coach, and I don't know if I want to deal with those offensive linemen. You know, I mean, there's so many ways you could go with that.
Well, he's out the door now. Did you see the news over the weekend that he is resigning?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. But I'm just saying, I'm sure Urban's going to go find another amazing strength coach. It's so important to have – seriously, let's take a minute to just say again, are you this much of an idiot?
Yes, he is.
Okay, there we go.
Yes, he is. I think we
just
do that.
Gets the stupid idea dunked on right away. You know, like, welcome to the NFL.
Let's take your calls and texts at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Should J.J. Watt, should the Titans pursue him? Should he be an option for the Tennessee Titans? And how comfortable are you getting into the 8, 9, maybe even $10 million range? Let us know on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's go to our phone line and welcome in Joe from Spring Hill, who wants to weigh in on J.J. Watt. Joe, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I absolutely think they should sign him. I know the price tag might be a little hefty, but a couple things come into play. I mean, one would be the familiarity with Vrabel's defense. I think Vrabel was the D coordinator over J.J. Watt for a minute in time. I know he came up the ladder quick. I think the ultimate decision has to be with Vrabel, because I think schematically going into most games, the Titans are, you know, we didn't have the personnel in place this year on the defensive side of the football, but I think schematically we'll be okay. And as we've seen throughout the playoffs, I mean, we got a quarterback that can score points. So, you know, we know that we're going to be in every game. I think it has to be, I'm all for it, but I think at the end of the day, if Vrabel gives the okay on it, like I said, Vrabel may not be a media darling, and, you know, we may not like the way he comes off, and we know he's an egomaniac, but at the end of the day, he's got the same goal as everyone else. He wants to win a championship, and I think Watt might be a piece of the puzzle heading in that direction. Guys, stay safe out there. Roads are a little treacherous. Thanks so much for taking the call. Have a great day.
You stay safe as well, Joe. Appreciate you taking time to call in this morning. Joe, I mean, it is one of those things where obviously Vrabel has some familiarity with it. Now, I think, you know, some Titans fans may hear that and say, all right, well, that's, he had Jadeveon Clowney familiarity as well, and that did not work out with the Titans. So, look, is that a factor? Maybe. Yeah. I mean, does J.J. Watt, did he really like his time under Mike Vrabel? Maybe that is a factor with J.J. Watt in all this. But, you know, that was one thing with Jadeveon Clowney, and I realize J.J. Watt is a different situation. He is more of a proven sacker of the quarterback than Jadeveon Clowney ever was, but that can't be the only reason if you're the Titans that you're going after this. If J.J. Watt is something that, you know, you're not getting into the, you know, $8-10 million a year range with J.J. Watt just because Mike Vrabel's worked with him.
Exactly. I get it. It's just, again, in even going back to what Poor said last segment, I mean, if you're going there, basically, to me, I just don't think you can. I think you can just rule out any of the other, you know, quote unquote top guys who are, you know, guys who are in their 20s.
Well, that or you can rule out Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. I mean, one of the two.
Well, that's true. I suppose you could totally just say thanks for your service, guys, and we're going with Westbrook, Akine, and we're going with
the draft.
You know,
maybe.
We got some Ferkser, we got some Pruitt out there. Yeah, I mean, if you want to just say, hey, this offense will be great regardless. We got Derrick Henry, got A.J. Brown, got Tannehill. What else do you need? I guess you could do that. I don't think that's smart. I don't think that's the way to go. And if you do this, then you've got to say goodbye to those other ones. I will say, look, if we're going by my guy Shields' list, you know, he's got Watt ranked as his overall 11th best player, you know, out there, only behind Shaq Barrett and Yannick Ngakoue among the among the pass rushers, and ahead of guys like Bud Dupree and Matt Judon. Like, I'm a proponent of Matt Judon. I swear, not just because I want him to come right to this locker room trashing in the media. Look, he's like, if they tag him, Judon is more than 20 mil. I think he's probably getting 12 to 15 on the market. You know, I would opt for that if I could make it work over a Watt. But hey, if J.J. Watt comes out next year in a new place and just tears it up, I also wouldn't call that the most shocking development in NFL history.
So, Joe, speaking of lists, Jeremy Fowler from ESPN was on SportsCenter and offered up the top five teams that he think makes sense for J.J. Watt in free agency. Here's what Jeremy Fowler from ESPN had to say.
He's going to have multiple suitors. I'm going to start with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know it's predictable with his brothers TJ and Derek there, but they have talked about playing together, maybe in a joking fashion. Hey, one day we'll all be on the same squad, but the Steelers are going to at least look into this, but they have a lot of salary cap problems, almost $30 million in a deficit, so they would have to make some money work, but maybe a 1 to 2 year deal, they can swing it. Let's go to the Green Bay Packers. Another little nostalgia note for Watt, because he grew up in Pewaukee. He's a Wisconsin kid. He spends his off seasons there. He could just go down the street and train with the Packers. They have a 3-4 defensive front. They could pair him with Kenny Clark up front, wreak a lot of havoc. Tennessee Titans, this one makes a ton of sense because they ranked 30th last year in pass rush sacks with 19. They desperately need help there. He's got the connection with Mike Vrabel, who was in Houston with him for 4 years. He knows how to get the best out of J.J. Watt, and they simply just need the help up front. So this one makes a lot of sense. I expect Tennessee to at least call. Buffalo Bills. This one's interesting because they don't have a lot of star players up front. not a lot of bloated contracts, but they have 7 or 8 really good players. But he would fit in as just kind of a moving situational piece they could throw in there for a second or third down, have some fun with. Buffalo is all in on the veterans, too. They went with Josh Norman last year for value. They could do that again. Last one, let's go Baltimore Ravens. The formula worked perfectly with Calais Campbell last year. He's going on 34 years old. They brought him in anyways. They traded for him. He made the Pro Bowl. So Baltimore's a place where they're always going to get good defensive linemen, no matter the age, no matter the price. They know that's where you win games. And so Watt makes a lot of sense there.
So, Joe, that was the list from Jeremy Fowler from ESPN. He throws out the Steelers, the Packers, the Titans, the Bills, and the Baltimore Ravens. What do you think of that list there that Jeremy Fowler has thrown out? And what do you think of the Titans being at number 3 on that list?
I mean, the Ravens, like, man, talk about a team that seems to be signing everyone and then getting rid of them and signing someone else and getting rid of them. Like, I never would have guessed that one. But, hey, they're trying to find the right combination. I mean, they're already in a situation where, you know, like, it's obvious they have to at least choose between Judon and Ngakoue, and they may end up with neither of them. I guess if I were the Ravens and then I ended up with, like, losing those guys and then bringing in Watt, I wouldn't feel great about the overall, you know, plus minus there. But, yeah, I mean, I think the Titans naturally, of course, I mean, they just naturally rank there around 3rd because of the, I think especially because of the Vrabel thing. And again, it's, you know, that defense, Watt has played in that a lot. So there's familiarity. It'd be easy. I mean, but, you know, JJ Watt can, I think if he's healthy and playing really well, he can fit into any defense. He can be a 4-3 defensive end. I mean, you can do, he's moved around a ton in his career. So that makes sense. I mean, obviously the sentimental pick here is the Steelers. I think your Green Bay Packers, you know, I think that would make sense for them. But the Titans are going to be, it's just like with Brady. I mean, anytime there's a strong connection like that, it's just naturally going to be talked about in our forums, whether there's actually truth to it or not. You know, I didn't think there was much interest at all from the Titans and Brady last year, but we talked about it a lot.
Yeah, I hear the Steelers part of it. And we talked about that some on Friday when this news first came out. I understand why that conversation is taking place. And look, maybe it ends up happening. But you heard Jeremy Fowler talk about it a little bit there. I mean, some of the salary cap gymnastics they would have to pull off to try to make this thing work. My question would be, if I'm a Steelers fan, is moving all that around really worth it for J.J. Watt? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe they feel like it is. But that would be a heck of a lot of movement they'd have to do to make J.J. Watt work and to have him come in and play alongside his brothers.
I mean, if you're a Steelers fan right now, and there's a lot of other questions about that team, including like $138 million that Ben Roethlisberger is about to make. But like, are you excited? Are you more excited about like J.J. Watt across from TJ than you were about Bud Dupree? I mean,
probably not.
To me, you know, you're downgrading again. Hey, I'd love to see Watt prove me wrong, but I mean, the trajectory of his career is pretty clear. And look, it's understandable. And the guy has had serious injury after serious injury, and he keeps coming back playing through them. All due respect to the guy, but I just think there's a lot of buyer beware on him.
When we come back, we will revisit a discussion that we had on Friday here on the show regarding Jerry Stackhouse and the Vanderbilt basketball program. It was an interesting weekend over the weekend, including some post-game comments directed at Joe Rexroad from Jerry Stackhouse after the game in Vanderbilt's win on Saturday. We'll address it next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.